All stories, even Anansi's stories, are simply love stories. We love the light that shines on our faces when we first enter this world as screaming babies. The lucky among us look to the light and find someone to fall in love with because we cannot see beyond. Them that hold, feed, and protect. Them that teach us love, hate, joy, and regret. These things make our short lives bearable. Love wielding force like the gods, impartial and powerful. It is beautiful and elusive with quick tempers, the one thing that is stronger than all the others. It hides in the secret places. Its voice is the sound of praise and curses. Gods and mortals seek it with desperate hearts full of desire. It inspires the words of the poet and the sword of the conqueror. It is as bright as the light that once shone down on your face, but it makes no promise to protect you or to keep you safe. The opposite of love is that which is sometimes beautiful but always terrible. The ones some call Osiris and others Eshu. Others call it death, and it waits patiently to be met. Hello, listener. Thank you for returning to our story. This episode will be somewhat irregular. You see, I am not history. I am not bound by the tedious research of the scholar, for I am memory. History has told you of Kamau, how the Obaifo fled the island, pursued at once by the hunter in his own sorrow. Memory will not tell you of facts but of passion. I will steal from the past where history could only borrow. I will connect together things seemingly random. This I promise you and more, if with me you will once again trod across the white sand beaches of the island shore, and listen now to the epilogue. Like all good stories, ours begins on a stage, an old man addressing a modest crowd. His back is bent with age, but his eyes are clear and his voice is loud. His legs are spread in the confident stance of an actor. His red-faced crowd is the new gentility. He wears a long black coat, although it is the dead of summer. He spreads his hands wide in a kind of ceremony. Welcome to the estate. He looks with satisfaction as the crowd settles down. Up on stage, it is as if he levitates. He is Richard Brown. The estate belongs to him. It is not like the others. There are no endless rows of black bodies working. It is not full of slaves, but performers. He buys the slaves at a discount. Every estate needs workers. He takes the ones the short-sighted planters would throw out and turns them into actors. Now we must meet another. Kala Brown, as she was named by her would-be master. Her enemies will call her Kala the Blood Queen, but she will be simply Kala to you and me. Her father was a white man. Her mother from an old and noble line, although they simply called her African. She was the prize of the Brown estate, the pretty girl who was always on key and never late. She was the lead in every play, and while Brown changed the plot and gave them different names, every production began the same. Welcome to the estate, where magic and music create stories fit for a king, told by those thought only fit for toiling. Tales that have never been heard, not on this island or even in the old world. You paid your coin, now get what is owed. Listen carefully, for who knows tonight what will be told. Then there was Ezekiel, standing center stage. He's also important to the story we must tell, the source of love, pity, and eventually rage. If Kala was the star, then Ezekiel was caught forever in her orbit. He could never stray too far. But to call them lovers would be an injustice. See, Ezekiel was not just a performer. He was Brown's son, so the estate and Kala were his to inherit. One could hardly fault the young master. The slave girl had always tan skin, black hair that was as wild and beautiful as a flower. Brown and green eyes that betrayed her mixed origin. You would be in love with her too, listener. And the thing he loved, he had been born owning. Ezekiel was a young prince. He had his father's strong voice, if not his iron will, a gentleman's strong mannerisms, and muscles like one who had worked the plow and till. They were raised together, the unusual upbringing of all brown slaves. She was taught to read by his tutor, so she could better perform in their plays. They were both young and beautiful, even if one was chattel and the other was not. You may have called her his mistress, but the situation was so unusual that it was hard to tell where the slave girl started and the lover stopped. That tragic dance may have gone on forever. It had, after all, consumed black and white alike, who found the kind of love upon which society had placed a censure. But the music stopped for these two on one stormy night, when Brown returned from town having just purchased another. Luke was the new slave's name. He was midnight skin and dreadlocked hair. His body was strong and still unbroken by a life of pain. His muddy eyes could hold anyone's stare. He had two masters before the estate, and they had not been kind. He had been beaten not just out of greed, but out of hate. But they could not sell the good-looking boy. Yes, he seemed strong and willing, but the sheriff suspected this was just a clever ploy the night he caught Luke reading. And so Brown used his silver tongue again to convince the constable to waive the hanging. In exchange, he would not only pay the constable but all his men. And so Luke arrived at the estate to begin a life of acting. Soon, however, the handsome slave man noticed the gorgeous slave woman, and she saw him looking. Slaves they might have been, but they were also thespians. So he courted her with the only thing he owned, his writing. He wrote to her not like a slave, but a bohemian. If I could just know you, this world would make sense. If I could just have you, the past would have made its recompense. If I could just hold you, I would gladly again make cruel sugar my king. If I could just take you, I would never ask for another thing. If you could just choose me, I would live in chains as if I was free. Tell me, listener, is it foolish for a slave man plucked from death to love a woman known to be the property of his master? The answer, of course, is yes. But Luke was more than just a slave or a laborer. He was a revolutionary spirit. He had learned to read despite the cruelty of his owner. He had survived the bloody pine plantation and the black bodies used to fuel it. Survived the wild-eyed planter with no food or crops, only anger. And he wrote down all of it. Kala, in turn, responded to him. You foolish man with more heart than sense, you should better choose the words on which your life depends. Maybe I saw you when you saw me, but seeing is barely the luxury of property. This is as good a life as we can hope for. To imagine your hand in mine would be to hope for more. So forget our fingers almost touched, and remember that life was never promised to us. Write down what we could have been, and then let the words blow away in the evening wind. If Kala's words carried a warning, they were overshadowed by the whisper of hope that perhaps she had unwittingly given him. When Luke wrote again, he was even bolder. I had a dream that I was free. I knew it because you were with me, because we walked on the sand about which I had only heard, and we laughed and danced and watched the birds. And my only thought was whether you would let me hold you, but my dream ended too soon. Kala's reply was only two lines. Foolish boy, I am too tired for dreams and fantasy, but if I were not, I would let you hold me. And like that, their love affair began. Some things we will omit out of respect and modesty. But imagine a man and a woman, who had been raised to believe they were only property, suddenly finding something, perhaps even sweeter than, their tantalizing dreams of liberty. Luke would write, his secret words lit by candlelight, "If loving you is the one good thing that I do, then I will live a life where all my dreams have come true. Not whip, nor chain, nor years of agony could make me curse a world that brought you to me." And she wrote to him, "I give you all that is mine to give. I give you my hair, my heart, my skin. I would also give you other things, the parts of myself hidden deep within, that dance and move in perfect rhythm to the sound of your heart beating." And so they continued for over a year, but eventually Ezekiel began to see. He realized what at first he only feared, that Kala was no longer fully his property.